Sports at the Letters. Sportsnet's Blue Jays podcast with Arden Zwelling and Ben Nicholson Smith.
In well center field, Kiermaier is back, going to climb that wall. It's gone, and the Royals lead it 1-0.
Kendrys Morales came into this game 8-for-13 with one home run off of Chris Archer.
It's at the Letters for Wednesday, November 16th on Sportsnet.ca and on iTunes. My name is Arden Zwelling, and I am rejoined this week by the fresh from vacation, the rejuvenated Ben Nicholson Smith, looking spry.
What's up, Ben? Not a whole lot. I actually do feel pretty good to be back. So yeah, ready for the hot stove. Always fun this time of year and good to get away for a bit too. So yeah, here we are, talking Jays.
Not jet lagged at all.
Not anymore.
London, England.
There were a couple days of large coffees as opposed to mediums, and I'm back to the mediums, which is a sign that I am no longer jet-lagged.
You're not going
to
stay over on the dark side, on the large coffee side?
A large coffee is very large in this world. It's a big beverage.
Join us. Join us. It's good over here. Life's good. We're very alert at all times. Ready to go. Ready to fight. Ready to scrap. The Blue Jays made a move that is not, like, it hasn't been officially announced yet, so I guess it's more of an agreement at this point. Maybe it's pending a physical or something like that, who knows. But the Blue Jays have an agreement with designated hitter Kendrys Morales for 3 years, $33 million. One of the first free agent dominoes to fall after Ari Dickey and Bartolo Colon joined what should be a very, very interesting Atlanta Braves rotation. Thoughts?
I mean, he's a good player. He's definitely not a great player. He's a good player.
Is he a good player or is he a good hitter?
I think he's quite a good hitter who's a good player. I don't think that he's, and I get where you're going here, because he's definitely not a defender.
Because what else does he do?
Nothing.
Yeah. He hits.
He doesn't run. He doesn't defend. And so you're looking at a one-dimensional player, even though a switch hitter. So, you know, there's an advantage there. But he's quite a good hitter. And I think that there's some value there. I think the price is pretty modest. I mean, $33 million. You know, if Charlie Morton gets 14, I know it's apples to oranges, but you are looking at a free agent market where guys are going to get paid. $33 million in that market is not a ton, and so I think they're paying him to be a good player. And anything beyond that would be a bonus. There are some long term concerns, but I think that it's a solid move.
If he hits 30 bombs last year, as he did this year, I think that's $11 million well spent. And I think it's a very home run dependent thing, because Kendrys Morales, he hits a single, it's not a sure thing that he's going to third on a hit behind him, or if he hits a double, it's not a sure thing that he's coming in to score.
If he hits a gapper, it might be a single.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about a guy who doesn't move very well and really hasn't since he tore his Achilles jumping on home plate after a walk-off with the Los Angeles Angels years and years and years ago. I don't love it, but you can't look at it in a vacuum, right? Because it's going to depend on what else the Blue Jays do. So, if they add Steve Pierce to be a platoon partner, or, what happens with Justin Smoak, or how else they build this roster. I think you have to look at it through the prism of what else happens this offseason, because it's just the first domino to fall. In a vacuum, if this was all that you did, and then you said, and then Justin Smoak's going to play every day at first base, and, we're going to have Ezekiel Carrera and Melvin Upton playing every day in the corner outfield spots, then you could say that was a bad offseason.
No question.
I think you have to look at it in the prism of what else happens.
Yeah, and I think they have a lot of work to do. They need to add a lot of good baseball players to this team. I think that they have some really good, and we're speaking so generally right now, obviously. But I think that this is a team with some really good players. In fact, they have some great players. Josh Donaldson is a great player. Aaron Sanchez might be a great player. They need to add some more good players to the point where they have a roster that can withstand the rigors of a six-month season plus October. And that is going to take a lot of moves. This Morales move can be one of them. I think there are some legitimate concerns with this. First of all, what happens in the next, in years 2 and 3, when he's 35 and 36, is he still hitting? Second of all, base running. Third of all, defense. And fourth would be, what happens when someone needs a break, whether it's Donaldson, Batista's likely gone, but Donaldson, Russell Martin, Tulowitzki, say it's Devin Travis. There are a lot of guys who can hit on this team who might need a few days at DH. And what do you do then? So I think that they've limited their flexibility day to day, but they've maintained a fair amount of payroll flexibility here.
Yeah, that's another part of this I don't like, is that you can't use that DH as like kind of a rest station for your other. And that's something John Gibbons did to great effect this year, really, was he could just kind of cycle guys through there and was able to get guys off their feet. And you saw the Blue Jays had pretty good health this year. So, you know, that worked out for him. You know, I think, you know, the Blue Jays are, they're an analytically in tune franchise, I guess. They're woke analytically. And I kind of went like diving into some stuff on Kendrys Morales. So you look at last year, Kendrys Morales had a 41.1% hard hit rate. The league average last year was 31.4. So we're talking about a guy who put the ball in play at a very high rate of speed. Like, a lot of the contact that he made was very, very hard, well above league average. And you look at some of the StatCast stuff. Kendrys Morales, his average exit velocity last year was 94 miles per hour. That was the ninth highest in baseball. Higher, much higher than Edwin Encarnacion's 91.5. So we're talking about a guy who hit the ball hard more often than Edwin Encarnacion did. So I wonder if the Blue Jays, they see a guy who barrels the ball, makes good contact already. He's kind of known for being a contact hitter and for putting the ball in play, but has been barreling the ball, has been hitting the ball hard and far. And they say, look, if we bring him into Rogers Center for half of the season, maybe that stuff plays up. And maybe all of a sudden he takes a jump in home runs, because some of those doubles that were off the wall in Kauffman or just didn't get out, maybe those go out at Rogers Center. I wonder if that's what the Blue Jays see here.
Yeah, I think that does make some sense. And you're looking too at a player who finished the year really strong. He hit 14 homers in the last 2 months of the season. And so he's trending in the right direction, you know, for what that's worth. So yeah, I think those numbers are pretty interesting. The fact that he hit the ball really hard, it's something that could play up in Rogers Center. So you can dream on him. And I think that's the best case scenario, is he's someone who just hits the ball into the gaps, over the walls, and does that enough times to make up for the shortcomings. And, you know, to be fair, let's say, so they're paying him $11 million per year on average. I mean, in this economy, that's essentially a win and a bet.
Well, yeah, pretty much.
So,
you know,
if he can do that, then you're set. There are the roster questions on a day-to-day basis. How is Gibbons going to manage this? And, it's to some extent, it's reminiscent of Ari Dickey, where, you have Dickey around and he produces, but what does that mean for the rest of the roster and the way the pieces fit together? So, it's going to be a challenge for Gibbons to make sure that he gets production out of Morales while also resting other guys. You throw interleague play into the mix. How do you handle that? But hey, I mean, he's a good hitter. You want good hitters on your team. He's someone that you want on your roster. It's just, like you were saying, this isn't enough. They need to go out and add a lot more pieces.
Yes. To me, the move spells the end of any possibility of Edwin Encarnacion returning. Do you agree with that?
Yeah.
You can't have Edwin Encarnacion playing 140, 150 games at first base. He just doesn't fit into the puzzle anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, I don't think he does either. And I think that when you look at the way it unfolded, I mean, as Shai Davidi has reported and as you guys discussed last week, there was a period of time where the Blue Jays were talking with Encarnacion's camp regularly.
Yeah.
And after the Morales signing and the days after that, they didn't talk with him. So I think that tells you something. Encarnacion is rightfully going to have a really strong market. Someone is going to want to pay him a lot of money. That's going to lead to a draft pick for the Blue Jays. They value that pretty highly. I think he's gone. And this Morales signing doesn't replace Encarnacion's production. I think they're going to have to spread that money around in a few different places to try and make sure that they have as good a team as possible in 2017.
I think that with some of the way that his power could play up at Rogers Center, the Blue Jays are kind of hoping that that replaces some of that, home run production. Maybe it's wishful thinking, but I wonder if that's kind of the gamble that they're taking.
Yeah, and it certainly wouldn't be the first time that a player has come to Toronto and seen his power number spike. We saw that even with Josh Donaldson. He was someone who was an MVP candidate before arriving here, and he arrived here and his home run power took even a little bit more of a spike up. So, it's possible that we could see that with Morales, but man, 42 home runs, that is really tough to replace. And Encarnacion has done that year in and year out.
Put the ball in the air, Rogers Center. Do not hit it on the ground. Put it in the air and hit it hard. Edwin Encarnacion, Jose Bautista, they both reject the qualifying offers. Edwin, obvious choice. Shai had kind of hinted that maybe some executives have been telling him maybe Jose has more to think about here than people are suggesting. Where do you stand on that?
I thought it was never a decision.
Yeah.
I thought Bautista should reject it from the get-go. I mean, you look at you look at what he can offer you, set aside what he's done in the past. Okay, so set aside his legacy with the Blue Jays, which is substantial and which should be celebrated and will be at some point in time. But you look at who he is right now. He's someone who doesn't give you a lot of speed. He's someone who doesn't give you a lot of defense, but he still hits for a ton of power and he still hits the ball. You know, you're talking about exit velocity. Batista, if I'm not mistaken, was in the 92, 93 range last year. That's in the top 20, depending on where you set your playing time limit.
92 and a half.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is a guy who hits the ball really hard for power and he has a great plate approach, as we've discussed, as you pointed out before. So this is a player who's going to get on base and hit for power. That's still really valuable. So I think that he's going to be valued in this market really highly, and he's going to get a multi-year deal that pays him pretty handsomely. Not as well as Encarnacion or Cespedes, but yeah. I think he's going to do well.
In a saturated market with kind of first base DH guys, right? Like with, you know, I wonder if there's a possibility that Jose doesn't get a very good deal, maybe looking at 2 years.
Sure. And there's, you know, you hear all kinds of different estimates, and I think that Batista's value is really tough to peg, depending on who you talk to. But some people even wonder if he ends up with a one-year deal. But that's what a qualifying offer is. So worst-case scenario, let's say he ends up with a one-year deal, he re-enters the market. Well, that's kind of where he would have been with the qualifying offer anyway. So I just think that there was no reason to take the qualifying offer and sell yourself short after waiting for this long to actually test free agency.
I believe that some team's going to get a lot of value out of Jose Bautista, like whoever ends up signing him, because you can kind of see his market being depressed by, you know, just the dearth of these guys that are out there. I think the Blue Jays moved so fast on Kendry Morales because they said, this is the guy that we want. We're not going to wait around. Like, we're going to go get him right away. Like, Edwin, you know, we put the offer on the table. It came off. Let's go get our guy. Let's go get it done, because we don't want to wait around until the end of this thing. Because there's a lot of options out there. So, you know, I, if somebody gets Jose on a two-year deal, $30 million or whatever it ends up being, I think somebody's going to get tremendous value of a guy who still walks a ton, has a ton of power, like you said, hits the ball hard, a tremendous plate approach, lengthens at bats, like, you know, helps the guys that hit before him and after him and runs up a pitcher's pitch count. I mean, I think there's still a lot to offer here.
Do you think there's any chance he's back in Toronto?
No, I don't. Yeah. But I do think the Blue Jays should consider it if he's going to be a bargain, in a sense, right?
Right. There's a price where he makes sense.
Yeah, I think there's a price where he makes sense. I don't think he'll be back in Toronto, but, you know, I would, you know, I think the Blue Jays should maybe consider it.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as with any player, hey, if someone's a big league player, there's a price where they make sense on your roster. And, you know, Batista, the draft pick, I think is going to be tough to walk away from for the Jays, because if he goes, then you get the pick. And if he stays, you don't get the pick. And so that's a really substantial value. I do think that he ends up leaving. And, you know, we've said this essentially for all year. I mean, I don't think that anything's really new in saying that we don't think Encarnacion and Batista are going to come back.
No, I've been saying it for 12 months that they're both gone. And the other thing is there's a draft pick tied to him, right? So any team that's offering him a contract is also factoring in however you value that draft pick, between $5 and $10 million usually. That's another thing that is just kind of messing up his market right now.
Yeah.
He's a tremendous player who's hit like more than 300 home runs, and he's not going to get a big payday. Like, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to be one of those guys who has a really, really good career and just doesn't get that big deal.
Well, yeah. And I guess he could go short term and try to re-enter the market. I think this is you probably take what you can get right now, just being 36 years old, but it'll be interesting. I think he'll get paid substantially, but he's not going to get that. You know, you talk about the Joey Votto $220 million deal, the Prince Fielder deal, some of these contracts that guys have signed in recent years. That's not happening for these players this offseason.
Blue Jays also signed Lourdes Gurriel out of Cuba, 23-year-old infielder/outfielder, kind of plays all over the place. We'll talk to Ben Badler in the second half of this podcast just about how he profiles, what he brings, what his, you know, timeline is. But, you know, to me, this is a move that neatly addresses the lack of kind of upper level of the minor leagues prospects that the Blue Jays have. It's a nice way to kind of backfill that. But the Blue Jays are in this messed up situation right now because they've got all these vacancies in the major league roster and they don't have guys who are ready to step into them. They don't have young talent ready to step into them. This is a nice way to kind of backfill that gap in the system You know, and maybe without having to wait for, you know, your prospects from, you know, the from A-ball to build up and get up there.
Yeah, I think that it's a nice move just because he's someone who can help this team. You know, you talk about trade deadline acquisitions. Well, maybe by midseason next year, he's someone who's proven that he's ready for a taste of the big leagues. And you know that on any team, and probably more so for a team that has a lot of older players, was the oldest team in the league last year, you're going to battle injuries at some point. And if that happens, you don't want to be scrambling on the waiver wire or hoping, you know, that Darryl Siciliani is going to have his age 29 season breakout. You know, you want to have someone who's got the upside to be a star type player. And that's what they have here in Gurriel. And it's not to say that it's going to happen, but he's someone who's got a lot of talent. And I think it'll be interesting to follow. I mean, it's, you know, it's fun too, from our standpoint, just to have interesting guys in the minor leagues that you can follow, because, you know, for the last couple years of AAA, I didn't see a lot of that.
Darryl Siciliani is a name that I have not thought about in a long time.
He's on the, on the 40 man. He's on that depth chart right now.
He is on that 40 man. You know, where do the Blue Jays go from here? It's kind of, that's what everybody wants to know. And you know, nobody knows, and that's the problem with free agency, is the players kind of have a whole lot of say in where they go. But I imagine the Blue Jays are going to continue to look for those kind of 2 to 3 year deals if they can get them on value plays, such as what they did with Kendrys Morales. Very similar to, you know, the Estrada and Happ deals of last year. I think that's the direction the Blue Jays are going to go in if they can, and I think they're going to continue to explore the trade market. Where do you stand?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're going with conventional wisdom, then let's say that would suggest something like Josh Reddick 3 year deal, Steve Pierce 2 year deal, Brett Cecil 3 year deal. There's your offseason. That's right. Kind of the conventional wisdom right now. Yeah. That would kind of surprise no one. It would be a solid set of moves. They'd be a playoff caliber team entering the season. I don't know. To be honest, I think they're going to do something else. I think they're going to surprise us, because that's usually the way things go. Yeah. But that's the kind of set of moves that on paper I could see them make.
Is that a successful offseason? I guess it is in a way. And it's not an offseason that's going to, you know, make anybody wet their pants or anything, but like it's a sound offseason.
Right. And if you were to go down that path with those three guys, well, you're not giving up picks. You're not signing anyone to a contract that's going to drag you down and create all kinds of dead money in the future. You're signing guys who, you know, fit needs, who address needs, give John Gibbons more good players to work with. And I think that would be the roadmap to kind of a solid offseason. But again, I think they're going to be involved in trades. I think that we're going to see them, you know, they don't necessarily get to sign everyone that they want. You know, we saw it a few years ago. They were interested in Carlos Beltran. Yeah. Just didn't happen. You know, you see Ben Zobrist, they try to trade for him. They don't get him.
Irvin Santana.
Right. Yeah. That's a great example. So sometimes it just doesn't happen for whatever reason. And that's why I think that we end up seeing them have to adjust a bit more on the fly than that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's the tough thing about this time of year, is you are kind of making it up as you go along, and you're working on different tracks. You know, I'm sure when the Blue Jays were negotiating with Edwin Encarnacion, they were also talking to Kendrys Morales' people and saying, hey, if this Eddie thing doesn't work out, like, we're going to be all over you. Let's move that ball forward a bit. So yeah, you never know. I think that, you know, if the Blue Jays were to make a splash, I'd like to see it be a corner outfielder of, you know, whether it's Dexter Fowler or Jonas Cespedes. I don't believe that that's going to happen, but that's, you know, if you were to make a big play, I think that's the spot to do it.
Ian Desmond too. I mean, the nice thing about Desmond is he gives you some experience in the infield. I think any of those three guys. I mean, certainly, I don't think that we're shocking anyone in saying that Fowler and Desmond and Cespedes are really good players who would be deserving of really substantial contracts and commitments. I think if the Jays went down that path, that's great. You know, as long as you're not going completely crazy on the contract front, those guys are impact players. I mean, absolutely, they would help this team.
And yeah, absolutely. So we'll see where the Blue Jays go from here. We'll see what happens. We will talk about somebody who could be an impact player down the line in Lourdes Gurriel Jr. with Baseball America's Ben Badler. The other side of this. Stay with us. It's At the Letters.
Pleased to be
be joined over the phone by Baseball America national writer Ben Badler. Ben, thank you very much for joining us today. And we'll start with Lourdes Gurriel Jr., the Cuban infielder slash outfielder that the Toronto Blue Jays signed last week. You've actually seen him play in person, so maybe you can give us a breakdown of kind of what his tools are and what his attributes are as a ball player.
Yeah, he fits into the, just, you know, we're seeing a bunch of shortstops, and I don't know if he's going to necessarily stay at shortstop, but we're seeing a lot of longer limbed shortstops, guys like Corey Seager, Carlos Correa, and physically, you know, Gurriel is that long, or probably even lankier than those kind of guys in terms of his body type. He's 6'3", probably pushing 6'4". But he's got a nice blend of tools and baseball skills too. I think he's a really smart player. He's got a good approach at the plate, pretty good balance. He's got, obviously, you know, whenever you have somebody who's that lanky and long arms, there's going to be some length to the swing. But I think for somebody who has those long levers, he does a pretty good job of trying to keep his hands inside the ball, stays within the strike zone, doesn't chase too many pitches outside of the strike zone, and when it's in the zone, he has pretty good contact skills, and he'll flash above average power too. So I think he's got a chance to hit, get on base, and potentially hit 20 or so home runs. I think the question is just where he plays in the field, just in part because he has been moved around a lot in Cuba, partly just because probably his ideal position might be third base. Obviously, he wasn't going to play that position in Cuba because his older brother, Ulieski Gurriel, was playing that position. So they moved him around to the outfield last season. A couple of seasons ago, he was playing shortstop. For me, I liked his actions and reactions in the infield. So I would put him at shortstop, see if he could play that position, maybe go over to third base, ultimately maybe where he ends up down the road. But he's got some versatility, too, to play the outfield. He actually got a step quicker his last season in Cuba, so center field might be an option as well. So some different options for the Blue Jays to consider in terms of where they're actually going to put him on the field.
Do you get the sense that he would basically focus on one position, or do you think that he could potentially be one of those multi-position guys who floats around a little bit from position to position?
Yeah, I think that's something where teams are valuing that versatility in players these days, and I think that could be something that enhances his value. For me, I think if he can play shortstop, that would be the position to focus on, to let him play there, and until he proves that he can't play that position in an everyday capacity, I would leave him at that spot. Now, do I think he, at the end of the day, is a shortstop? Probably not. Again, I think his best fit is probably at third base. You know, he did get quicker again his last season in Cuba, so maybe that helps him out and gives him an advantage. Unfortunately, his last season in Cuba, he was playing a lot of left field, again, partly just due to his brother being at third base. And for whatever reason, you know, their shortstop on that Industriales team in Cuba, it's not like they were running out Francisco Lindor. So a little bit of a head scratcher why they were having him play left field instead of shortstop, because he, you know, he has the arm strength. He's got a strong arm. He has, I think, pretty quick reactions. I've seen him make some diving plays that are, you know, going to his left that are pretty impressive. You wouldn't expect to see from somebody who's as big as he is. But, you know, I think maybe the additional quickness could give him a step better range than he showed a couple of seasons ago when he was playing shortstop in Cuba. So, to me, that's where I would put him. But again, that versatility factor, I think, is something that teams are valuing, and especially in the minor leagues, you're seeing a lot of guys who are, you know, teams are having to move around and play different positions just to give them that versatility, give them that experience that other other spots, but given that he already has a lot of experience at some other positions, I would like to see him be developed as a shortstop and see if he can handle it, handle that position.
You know, when you talk about a guy who has long levers and, you know, who's 6'4 and kind of a, just kind of a long athlete, you know, my mind immediately goes to timing and to how pitchers, you know, can attack those kind of hitters with breaking balls and different pitches. What's his plate approach like, and where is he in that aspect of the game as, you know, a guy who's 23 and I'm sure has seen a pretty good wealth of pitching to this point?
Yeah, you know, that guys who are that big, it can be a, you know, it can be a good thing. You got that leverage that he's able to generate in his swing, and that's definitely a plus. But when you are that big, it does create a bigger strike zone that you have to cover, and it does generally tend to create some length in your swing, and unless you're you know, just a mutant like a Miguel Cabrera. But there is some length to the swing, but I think what helps him is his approach. I've seen sometimes some slow breaking balls give him some trouble, but generally he stays within the strike zone. He's got a pretty patient approach to hitting. He's not somebody who's going up there and is just a free swinger. I think that's what really gets a lot of guys in trouble who are his size. When they have that big strike zone to cover, it's a lot of plate area that you have to cover, and then they expand it, and that's really difficult to do. But I think he does a pretty good job of understanding how pitchers are trying to attack him. Obviously, he's going to be facing much better pitching in the major leagues or even in Double-A, Triple-A, wherever they send him, than he was seen in Cuba, where most guys are throwing, you know, mid to upper 80s fastball and a lot of breaking balls he is seeing, but it's not a lot of good breaking balls. So that's definitely going to be a difference for him, but he does have good strike zone discipline, I think, and that ability to stay within the strike zone, I think, is going to help him out going forward.
So far, you're describing what sounds like a pretty good player. I mean, someone who can contribute on defense and has a good plate approach, maybe even a little bit of power. What kind of timeline do you expect he'll be on? I mean, this is someone who's 23 years old, so is this someone who could be in the major leagues this coming season?
I think there's a possibility that he gets to the major leagues this season, just based on his talent level, his present ability that he was showing in his last season before he left Cuba. But he looked like a guy who could slot into Double-A, Triple-A right away. Now, in terms of the transition to the United States, there's always a lot of things that go into that, both on the field and off the field for Cuban players. So it's difficult to say. I mean, he's not one of these guys like a Yoenis Céspedes or Jose Abreu who would go immediately to the major leagues. I think he is going to need some time in the minor leagues, and the Blue Jays, you know, they have two very cold weather affiliates in their upper minors. So I'm not sure if maybe they'll say, all right, well, maybe we can just keep him in high A and in the Florida State League to start of the season, or if they are going to push him up to the upper minors to begin. Either way, I expect him to be at Double A or Triple A very quickly. They have Richard Urania as well at shortstop who finished last year at Double A. So that's a good problem for them to have to sort out between those two guys. But I do think he'll probably start out somewhere in the upper levels of the minor leagues, whether it's Double A, Triple A, with a chance to either in the second half or maybe by the end of the season be in Toronto. Although I don't necessarily think it's a given that you will see him in the major leagues this season.
Yeah, in the Blue Jays system, you're going to Buffalo, New Hampshire, or perhaps Lansing, Michigan. It's going to be a bit of a weather shock there, I think.
It's definitely, especially when you know, this is not a Dominican player who, you know, you're signing at 16, 17 years old and giving all that time to transition culturally and with the language. And you just want to, when you have Cuban players, you want to make things as easy on them to acclimate to the country as possible. So, sending somebody who's lived in Cuba for pretty much his whole life up to, New Hampshire in April is definitely can be a shock.
I'm sure. And, you know, just speaking of Cuban players and what it, you know, takes for them to reach, you know, Major League Baseball, you know, you've written a lot about what the Gurriels have had to go through to, you know, to defect. And it, you know, it kind of sounds like they haven't, you know, they didn't have to take a boat or anything. It sounds like they haven't had, you know, maybe as rough of an experience as some other players have when they defect. But maybe you can just kind of take us through, you know, just detail what, you know, what the Gurriel brothers had to go through. And, you know, even in terms of, you know, getting permanent residency and just some of the loopholes that they had to go through to arrive at where they are now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the way that Cuban players leave the country, unfortunately, just to be able to pursue a contract with a major league team involves a lot of underground, you know, a lot of folks who are involved in this underground world where these, you know, these players, unfortunately, for the most part, can't just leave Cuba on their own and sign with a major league team. They have to go these routes. Like you said, the Gurriels at least did not have to, you know, go through these, you know, a boat ride to get there, but still they were, you know, they were at the Caribbean Series in the Dominican Republic in February. And after that ended, they just ran for it. And I don't know the exact circumstances of that, but I was in the Dominican Republic at the time. So it was a lot of big news going on there, and at the time, I think there was a lot of Dominican authorities who were looking for him, Cuban authorities who were looking for him. So it's unfortunate that these guys have to go through that type of process just to be able to play baseball. So it's unfortunate, but yeah, after that, they all these Cuban players once they leave, because you can't as a U.S. company or you know, any major league baseball team is not allowed to sign a player until they establish residency in a foreign country. And so for the, you know, both the Gurriel brothers, they were able to get that residency in fairly short order and didn't really have to wait around, too long for Major League Baseball to grant them free agency, which, certainly helped his older brother sign quickly. I think the difference between him and Lourdes Gurriel, I was at Lourdes at the time when he left, was 22 years old, to be exempt from the international bonus pools and to be able to essentially be an unrestricted free agent as a Cuban player, you have to be at least 23 years old and have played 5 seasons in a foreign professional league. So Lourdes had played 5 seasons, but he didn't turn 23 until October. So even though he was declared a free agent this summer, he had to basically just wait around until he turned 23 in October, and then he was able to sign that major league contract that he got with the Blue Jays.
On the most recent, I think it's the most recent cover of Baseball America, there is another Blue Jays prospect, and it's an awesome photo, Vlad Guerrero Jr. up there with no batting gloves and looking like he's ready to mash. And I wanted to ask you also about Vlad Jr., because he's someone who's, you know, much younger than a lot of prospects, much younger than basically anyone you're going to see coming into the Major League Baseball through the draft. And yet he's already got a professional season under his belt and a pretty successful one at that. So what have you seen in Guerrero so far?
Yeah, he's special. I mean, we ranked him as the number one international prospect last year. And it's always good when players come as advertised and in fact, probably better than advertised. In Vladdy Jr.'s case, a lot of that is the credit to him and then the Blue Jays coaching staff developing his defense. But I think we got to start talking about his offense first, because that's really where he shines. I mean, he's not really, people are going to want to know how similar he is to his dad. And I think they're very different body types. He's almost built, Vladdy Jr. is almost built like his dad was, you know, more towards the end of his career. Not the 40 stolen base guy that his dad was in his prime. So I think in terms of the speed and the arm strength, those two tools that the dad has on him, but Vladdy Jr. is a pretty special bat. It's a ferocious bat speed, outstanding hand-eye coordination, whether it's, you know, premium velocity fastball or a sharp breaking ball. Doesn't matter. He can square it all up. Really good feel for manipulating the barrel. and just putting the bat to the ball consistently, and not just making contact, but driving the ball. He's got some serious power to him. It was probably plus raw power when he signed. Might even be bigger than that. I think he's got a chance to hit 25, 30, maybe even more home runs down the road. So a guy who also has a pretty good understanding of the strike zone. I mean, we're talking about a kid who's, and he still is a kid. He's 17 years old, who they threw into the Appalachian League. Most guys his age are in the Dominican Summer League, or if you're really advanced with them, you put them in the Gulf Coast League, and they put him into a league that's sort of a hybrid league, but for high school draft picks and college players, and he was the best player in that league. So the offensive ability that he has is tremendous. I think he's going to be a masher one day in the middle of the order. And then defensively, we ranked him the number one international prospect pretty much just because of his offense. So he was an outfielder who, not a great runner, not a great athlete, below average arm. The Blue Jays, when they signed him, said, you know what, why don't we try him out at third base at Instructional League? And my reaction, I think the reaction from a lot of scouts who had seen him play as an amateur were, what are these guys doing? There's no way this guy is going to play third base. He's probably a left fielder, best case scenario, maybe moves over to first base. But credit to the Blue Jays and to Vladdy Jr. because so far so good at third base. I don't think he's a great defender at third base by any means. He's obviously new to the position, and I think mostly he's just focused so much on hitting and not so much on defense for most of his life. But they moved him to the infield, and his arm actually played better. His arm stroke got shorter. His arm got stronger, which makes sense. Obviously, his dad had a tremendous arm, and 16 to 17, your arm can get stronger, and that happened with him. I think his short area quickness got better. He's not a he's certainly not a burner by any means, but he actually did even steal some bases this year. So he showed a little bit more agility than people expected. His arm got stronger. So I thought this was going to be a very short-lived experiment with him at third base, but I don't see any reason at this point to move him off the position. So if he can actually stay at the position, he's even more valuable than I thought he was going to be coming into the year when I thought he was going to be a middle of the order hitter. You put him at third base instead of left field or first base, the value is just even higher with him. So there's a ton to like about Vladdy Jr.
Yeah, I think you made a good point at the beginning that we have to stop these comparisons between him and his father, which I guess I get that it's tempting for people, but he's a completely different hitter. From people that I've talked to, they've kind of said, he as a 17-year-old, he lays off sliders that you see guys who are 24, 25 having trouble with. And obviously his father was notorious for not having a great plate approach. So I think there's a big distinction to be made there. I'm curious, are there any other kind of international players in the Blue Jays system that maybe getting a little bit overlooked or that, that you'd like to talk about? We know about Richard Urania, but what about the, Angel Perdomo or Yency Diaz or some of these other guys who catches your eye?
Yeah, the Blue Jays pretty much put all their eggs into one basket a couple of years ago to sign Vladdy Jr. So pretty much, and they went over their bonus pool to do it. So right. Pretty much their whole 2015 international signing class was Vladdy Jr. This year they were limited to signings of $300,000 or less. So I think it'll probably end up being a good bet because I think Vladdy Jr. is probably worth it, but I think the other guy, maybe in the upper levels to keep an eye on from their Latin American program is Richard Urania. I don't think he's a guy who's maybe going to catch your eye in terms of one real loud, flashy tool. I think it's a lot of average tools across the board. But I think if you have that can be a very valuable player when he can play shortstop. And Urania, I think, definitely can play shortstop. I think he has a good knack for staying within the strike zone, good back control, nothing flashy again at shortstop, but he gets the job done there too. He's got a pretty good internal clock and good overall level of game awareness in pretty much everything he does. He's a very instinctive player on the field. So even though the raw tools maybe won't catch your eye right away, the instincts and the overall feel for the game make everything play up. And even though I don't expect him to be a star with that, the kind of ceiling that Vladdy Jr. has, I think he's pretty close to being able to contribute at the major league level. Maybe not this season, but or maybe not 2017, but I think by 2018, he's got a chance to step in and potentially, depending what the Blue Jays situation is at that point between him and Lourdes Jr. And their major league situation, has a chance at least for somebody to be an everyday shortstop at the major league level.
And Ben, great stuff. Baseball America national writer Ben Badler. Follow him on Twitter at Ben Badler. And I highly recommend you go read some of the work that he's done on Lourdes Gurriel Jr. and his brother as well. Thank you for joining us, Ben.
Thanks, Ben.
Well, thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Great stuff as always from Ben Badler, one of the more knowledgeable guys following that international beat. Interesting thoughts about Richard Urania, who this year topped out at AA after he played 97 games at High A at Dunedin, and he hit 305, 351, 447. Clearly too good for that level. Went up to AA, finished the season there. Be interesting to kind of track his progress. Still just 20. He'll be 21 this year.
Right. And, you know, I think it was an interesting point by Ben, too, that it's not as though every single prospect has to turn into a superstar. You know, just because you're this switch hitting shortstop doesn't mean you're the next Francisco Lindor. You can be someone who's solid, and that can be good enough. So maybe that's what ends up happening with Urania.
Yeah, and then when you think about, you know, Lourdes Gurriel, if he turns, you know, if he ends up being Sean Rodriguez, that's in a way a bit of a success.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you get useful players, and this is what the Blue Jays need, but if you just get a lot of useful players, you're just in a much better position.
Absolutely. And that multi-positional versatility looks like something that he's going to have. It's something that, you know, teams are valuing right now. I think it's important also to point out Gurriel Jr., he signed a 7-year, $22 million contract. But if he does become a major leaguer quickly, and if he does fulfill the potential that he has, I imagine that built into that contract, I don't know this for a fact, but this is built into a lot of international contracts, is that the player has the right to opt in to arbitration. So, you know, the Blue Jays wouldn't just be paying him $3 million a year for a while. Like we saw Yasiel Puig didn't opt into arbitration, but Jose Abreu did this year. So that's an interesting thing to keep an eye on years down.
Both fellow Cubans. So similar situation.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, I think there's a connection between Gurriel Jr. and Kendrys Morales, obviously both Cuban guys, I believe, rep by the same agency. Interesting.
Morales is Wasserman. I don't know who.
I'm pretty sure Gurriel Jr. is with the same guy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So interesting stuff. And that's going to be it for us. You can follow Ben on Twitter at BNicholsonSmith. You can follow our producer, Sam McKee, on Twitter at Sam A. McKee. Don't follow me on Twitter. We'll be back next week, perhaps, if something happens. We'll see.
Let's hope so.
Yeah. We'd like to get back in here next week. But as always, we appreciate your patronage. We appreciate you listening and your likes and your favorites and your subscribes. Thanks for coming along with us. This has been At The Letter.